Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 31st, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by iStock Photo, the web's original source for stunning and affordable photos, media, and design elements to help you get creative with your website, print materials, presentations, blogs, and more. Check out their special offer at iStockPhoto.com/TechNews2011. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news today, try to make some sense of it all. We're stomping on top of the Department of Justice.
We are.
Filing an antitrust complaint seeking to block the AT&T T-Mobile merger. Is this a suit? Because I see everybody saying they're suing to block the merger.
I mean, because they can't stop the thing right by themselves. There's going to be a case, and AT&T and T-Mobile are going to be fighting it.
So they go to court over this. But it is technically filing a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
You file the complaint with the court? Not that it matters much. I'm just curious.
It's a lawsuit.
Yeah.
To say that. Because I don't want to be inaccurate right now.
Gotcha. United States Department of Justice really shocked AT&T and T-Mobile by doing this. But a lot of people, especially T-Mobile customers, are very excited about it. Deputy Attorney General James M. Cole wrote the statement. And it's pretty blunt. He says things like the combination of AT&T and T-Mobile would result in tens of millions of consumers all across the United States facing higher prices, fewer choices, and lower quality products for mobile wireless services. Ouch.
Well, I mean, a lot of people weren't expecting the government to intervene at all. Is that the situation? Because I remember, maybe it was a long time ago, but Microsoft and Intuit, they were going to get Intuit was going to get purchased by Microsoft, and the DOJ stopped that. So I wasn't that surprised to see something like this come out where they said, look, this is ridiculous. It's
only
four.
When was that, though? That was 1995.
95.
I mean, frankly, the Department of Justice almost never moves on any trust grounds.
But if they had read the leaked documents that said, hey, AT&T does not have to spend the kind of money that they say they have to spend in order to build out their own infrastructure rather than buy T-Mobile, it would be irresponsible for them not to move on this, knowing that information.
They also pointed out that T-Mobile's low prices and innovative products have been a, quote, disruptive force. They pointed to the fact that T-Mobile was the first to offer BlackBerry devices in the U.S., the Sidekick, Android devices, unlimited service plans, nationwide Wi-Fi, and implied that if AT&T bought T-Mobile, they would not innovate at that level. Here's the most forceful quote in the statement. AT&T could obtain substantially the same network enhancements that it claims will come from the transaction if it simply invested in its own network without eliminating a close competitor.
Sounds pretty reasonable.
wait, investing?
And that points directly to what you're talking about with that leaked document.
You guys think that, AT&T should invest in themselves? That's what the DOJ is saying? You think that's a more reasonable thing than just buying up a competitor?
I think what the DOJ is saying is, yes, it sounds pretty reasonable. Hey, if you've got this amount of money, why don't you just invest so you don't take out a competitor and then you still get the network that you say you want and you don't kill competition?
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, if they actually did the investment and they started doing some really great pricing plans, they could kill T-Mobile that way. I mean, that's the thing about competition. It's good to have a lot of companies because, like the DOJ was saying, you have to do some really weird things. Like, I think Sprint right now is doing unlimited. Like, you would get unlimited speeds for a certain price, no throttling, no nothing, because they are forced to deal with the very real nature of the wireless business. So, I mean, do you guys think the deal is going to go through at this point?
Well, it looks in question now. I thought the deal was absolutely going to go through, but it's harder to say. However, AT&T is going to fight this. AT&T General Counsel Wayne Watts said that they intend to file for an expedited hearing and vigorously contest the matter in court. They stand to lose $6 billion worth of cash and spectrum if the merger doesn't go through. Because
they have to try as hard as possible.
Yeah,
just
there's a reverse breakup fee or whatever that's called. AT&T said it will bring back to the U.S. some 5,000 call center jobs if the deal is allowed to proceed. The carrier also said it will promise that no U.S. call center jobs will be lost if the deal closes. So there's a little threat implied there. Now, they made that announcement before the Department of Justice made their announcement. But AT&T says the burden rests on the Department of Justice to prove any anti-competitive impact. So if that's the case, it is a little bit harder for the DOJ to prove anti-competitive impact when you've got Verizon and Sprint and potentially LightSquared out there, U.S. Cellular, regional carriers.
On the full text of the DOJ statement, they were talking about how these two companies are competing in 97 out of 100 of the top areas in the country. So they are competition for each other, and killing one or the other is not going to be good for competition. So I think the DOJ is bothering to do this, considering how hands-off they are for a while. They must have some serious stuff ready for AT&T and T-Mobile when they go to court.
The funny thing is that they make a good case of why T-Mobile's been such a good company and really should be a competitor, but T-Mobile wants this to go through as well.
Oh, yeah.
You see T-Mobile being like, oh, we're not that great. You know, Sidekick, forget that.
Actually, yeah, T-Mobile sent a note out to their employees, according to This Is My Next, saying, hang in there, folks. You know, customers have many reasons to choose T-Mobile. Deutsche Telekom, which is the parent company of T-Mobile, and AT&T believe the DOJ has failed to acknowledge the significant consumer benefits of this deal and essentially, like, cheer up, troops. We're going to get merged. I'm not sure how many of the T-Mobile employees are excited about that.
Either getting six or $39 billion. I don't think it's that bad.
Now, on the one hand, most of the people in our chat room and most of the people I've talked to have said, oh, thank goodness, we need to preserve competition. But what about the other side? What if this actually ends up with T-Mobile just going out of business? The reason T-Mobile wants to sell is they're the number four carrier of the nationwide carriers in the U.S. Would it be better for AT&T to buy them or for them to go bankrupt?
Well, or maybe they just have to be a crappier company before it's allowable. Because right now, the DOJ is saying T-Mobile is a good company. They do a lot of things well. They shouldn't be eliminated.
Or T-Mobile maybe shopped around to a smaller company like Sprint, Nextel. That's
exactly.
The other thing.
Well,
there are
Does the calculus change any? I mean, if Sprint buys T-Mobile, it still reduces the competition down to three. If the DOJ is saying it's anti-competitive.
On what kind of markets they actually serve, right? I mean, the thing is, with AT&T being competition with T-Mobile in certain areas and Sprint coverage not being exactly the same.
They're pretty much exactly the same, though, nationwide. I mean, I don't know that
also,
there's that much of a difference.
You have to find out what it would cost Sprint to build out, too. Because AT&T said it costs us $3 or $4 billion. So that, I mean, there are a lot of factors to look at for whatever company is going to buy the other, if any.
Well, I'm still hoping for either LightSquared or mesh networking that requires us not to even use carriers. We'll get to that later on in the show. But right now, let's move on to something a little happier. Offline Gmail, Google Docs, and calendar access. The reason this is important is if Google wants you to use their services, they really need to be able to allow you to use them offline. You can use Microsoft Office offline. You can use Outlook offline. If they really want to seriously compete with that, they have to provide offline access. And if they want people to use Chrome OS, they have to provide offline access. So we've been playing around with this. How does this work?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, so I use the Chrome browser. It's my main browser. And I was looking around saying, okay, well, let me just jump in the Chrome Web Store, which is where offline Gmail is supposed to be. Because, you know, I want to try it out and see how it goes because it's a web app. And there's no actual Chrome Web Store shortcut anywhere in the browser, which just seems a little bit odd to me, but whatever. Tom said, why don't you just search for Chrome Web Store?
That's what Google wants you to do.
Well, but okay, which works, but a nice little shortcut would be nice. Anyway, in the Chrome Web Store, it's not actually called Gmail at all. It's called Offline Google Mail, which is a little confusing
easy to guess.
If you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, because there is a Gmail app. I thought, until you found that the Gmail app was the one that was going to be available offline.
Why they wouldn't just call it Offline Gmail, I guess because it works for Google Apps as well. But anyway, once you do that, it's a web interface. Looks like the mobile web interface for Gmail that allows you to, obviously, look through emails, respond, star things, archive items, the general stuff that
right.
you would do if you were on a plane or somehow disconnected.
And obviously none of that stuff happens until you reconnect later.
Exactly.
So you have to remember to have that app up when you reconnect, I would imagine.
But like you were saying, Sarah, the interface is completely different. It's not like the regular desktop experience. You get the tablet style or the mobile version of it. So you get the double pane thing.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that kind of jarring when you're going from, I don't know, you're going... Am I online or offline? At least you have a very easy way to tell because your Gmail looks completely different.
I wonder if they want people to for sure know that. I don't.
People won't notice a little light.
You're already using an app called Offline Google Mail, so you know what you're doing.
I guess, you know, it's a little weird, but at least it works and it's good. Now, the difference for Google Docs and Google Calendar, they aren't coming yet. I think they're coming, later this week? And when they come, it makes a little more sense because they'll just add an option to the settings for the existing Google Doc and Google Calendar web apps, but the offline access will be read-only. You will only be able to read word processing documents and spreadsheets, and for calendars, you can read and respond to RSVPs, but you can't create new calendar entries. I don't know. As far as being able to read offline docs, that kind of guts it. Like, I guess it'd be nice to read my docs offline, but frankly, I want to be able to edit them offline mm-hmm. and then upload the changes later. However, with a collaborative client like Google Docs, that could cause problems if you're sharing it with multiple people. I understand that that's a harder nut to crack.
Yeah, because it's like, who edited it last?
Yeah.
So that when everyone goes online again, all those changes propagate.
It just reminds me of every workaround I've ever tried when I was offline. You start composing an email, and that's how you would save everything, or you would go to your Word document, and then you'd go ahead and then put it back in Google Docs when you had online access. So it's kind of annoying that people are going to do these workarounds.
And then calendar. That. I mean, yeah, I want to see my calendar appointments when I'm offline. That's helpful. But I also want to be able to create, you know, a new calendar item when I'm offline. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of essential. If you remember Google Gears, you're probably one of the few, but that was the previous way to do things like Gmail offline. That they got rid of that a year or so ago. They're using standards for this version. Among them are IndexedDB, which is used to run the database that stores the data, and HTML5's app cache, which lets the web app run without having a connection to the internet. So anyway, give them a whirl. They're very at the very beginning of this. They talked about it quite a bit more on This Week in Google if you want to get more information about how they work.
I'm just really surprised that you have to do them all individually and that they aren't all in one single plugin. Like, why would someone want to do offline caching for their Gmail and not for their Docs? Chances
well, but they're different apps. I don't need to have my Google Docs and my Gmail as one app. That wouldn't make sense. But I see what you're saying.
I guess what I'm saying which is why is there a separate
offline Gmail app?
Yeah, from the like regular why isn't it Gmail just app? Google yeah, yeah. offline? You know, all of Google's properties are now offline through this one thing. Just yeah. seems like a very broken way.
Well, they have to do it app by app, and I guess yeah. they decided it was yeah. too hard to convert the current Gmail app.
Sure.
Microsoft Windows chief Steven Sinofsky is fighting the good fight to quell some unrest by Microsoft fans about how the Windows 8 ribbon works in Windows Explorer. Apparently a bunch of people got a little up in arms saying that the Windows 8 ribbon was going to be the new user interface. They were confusing that with the fact that there will be two interfaces in Windows 8. There's the Metro interface, which is very tablety. But then Steve Sinofsky made it very clear there will still be the Windows 8 desktop. It actually works kind of cool. You'll be able to use both, whether you're on a tablet or a laptop or anything. And the Windows 8 desktop code won't execute until you call it up.
So it's almost like the Windows desktop is like its own other application aside, or the program manager, like the old days. So you got to call it up. So it's not destroying your resources. I mean, how are people so confused with this? I thought Microsoft's very clear. There's going to be this Java HTML5 style tablet interface, and then when you want, you always have Windows underneath there. So where was the confusion coming in? Because they showed the ribbon? Because they were improving Windows 8?
Well, they showed
the
ribbon in Windows Explorer. Right. And then Windows Explorer is often identified with the GUI, with the user interface, even though it isn't exactly the same thing. And so folks were like, oh, well, that's going to be the GUI. And, you know.
I think that they're confused because in the past, when has Windows ever given people a choice with two different experiences like this? So they weren't prepared to be like, okay, look, I have my choice. Two very different experiences based on what I like.
Cantata points out two things are more confusing than one thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's actually a really good idea to give people choice. But choice also creates confusion. I mean, it's...
When they first announced Metro, we did have some discussion about, like, is this really going to work? People really going to like it? The fact that you can compose apps in HTML5 for Metro, but they haven't made clear if you can still do apps in your normal C++, et cetera, and .NET for the regular Windows 8 desktop. That's still not clear. They haven't, you know, so there's been a lot of FUD and confusion around this, and a lot of people criticized it, saying, why do I have to have two interfaces? You know, like, they used to have like an HP used to have its own interface over Windows when you launched it, and they were talking about doing it again with WebOS, and everybody thought, well, that's a stupid idea. I want the Windows interface, and now Windows is doing it to itself.
I mean, Microsoft's tried this with Media Center. Okay, Media Center became a program that people completely forgot existed because it was a program. So they decided for Metro, just let's throw this up in your face. So when you're actually sitting there with your computer, I think it really depends. When you start it up, If you just see the interface for your tablet, because Windows 8 is supposed to be all tablet optimized, mm-hmm. that makes sense. Because if it's otherwise, you get the desktop and you got to go into the start menu and then let me have the tablet interface as you're trying to navigate with your finger. That seems like a mess. But like sometimes you're using a tablet and you're like, this would be really nice if I could just go to the full-on program. Then you'd click your way out of the actual tablet interface. I don't know if people would be confused unless they are given two options when you start up every time. I don't think that's going to be what Microsoft's going to do this
time. I'm sure internally, too, nobody could agree that one was better than the other. So they were just like, let's do both.
Well, and I think in Microsoft's mind, they've done this before. They had DOS, and they put Windows Program Manager on top of it. And then they put Windows 98 on top of it. In fact, there was a lot of FUD when Windows 95, rather not 98, when Windows 95 came out that DOS was going away. And they had to say, no, you could still get to DOS, mm-hmm. even though you don't boot into it. You boot into Windows 95, you can still get to the command line. And it reminds me of this, where it's like, no, we've got Metro, but you can still get to the desktop, don't worry. And there's just a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt around
FUD.
It.
FUD.
Yeah, as they say. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, iStock Photo, the web's original source for high-quality stock images. We were talking before the show about examples of when we would need photography or royalty-free photography.
Like for the Windows Store, the confused computer user would be a great stock image. A guy's like, what's going on with Microsoft? I don't understand.
So I actually typed in confused computer user, because iStock Photo says, hey, we've got award-winning search on our site. So instead of using some search engine, you type confused computer user, and it actually gives me some pretty darn good photos.
See, this person is like, is this
Java?
What is this?
Computer users.
I mean,
here.
You've got more than 10 choices.
Oh, yeah. No, it goes, there's four pages of this stuff.
Confused computer user.
You know, that's a lot of confusion right.
Because the other thing is, you don't want to use the same confused computer user
those
graphic that everybody else
at
uses.
Windows 8. What do I do?
This guy. He's using Windows 95 for the first time. So you want to make a blog post. You don't want to worry about royalties or getting a copyright infringement. If you go to a search engine, you might be able to search for, you know, some things by that, but you're not going to find the wealth of material that you'll find at iStock Photo. So if you're serious about illustrating your blogs, or if you're making print materials, they have royalty-free stuff for that as well. They also have movies. They have audio content. You can pretty much illustrate in audio, video, or still image, anything you want at iStock Photo. The credits run you, you know, around $1.50 all the way down to $1 if you buy enough of them in bulk. And we give you a discount. If you're buying a bundle of 50 credits or more, 10% off a bundle of 50 credits when you go to iStockPhoto.com/TechNews2011. That's TechNews2011. iStockPhoto.com/TechNews2011. Get 10% off 50 credits or more and use those credits to get some photos. If you do a lot of photo illustration on your blogs or your print materials, you definitely want to check this out. Let's move on to the Sony cavalcade of announcements. Yeah, we need a fanfare. So IFA is happening in Berlin. We're getting a lot of product announcements out of IFA, and some of them are coming in dribs and drabs. Some of them are coming in avalanches. So I'm just going to throw them out there quickly, and you guys let me know what you think. Sony Tablet P, now official. We've talked about this before. It's coming to Europe in November, U.S. by the end of the year, and no Wi-Fi version in the U.S., only the 3G-enabled
well, 3G
one.
With Wi-Fi. There's no Wi-Fi,
no
only,
Wi-Fi
version.
Only version, right.
I like it. I'm excited about this weird form factor.
Mm-hmm. I liked it better when it was called the S2.
Yeah, I kind of did too, actually.
Really?
Tablet right. P?
Tablet P, yeah. Just
that
yeah,
the
well,
name is a little...
bathroom-y.
I still like the device.
Then maybe you'll like the Sony Tablet S. Which is the other tablet that
for
is
super?
Is, we actually have a price for it. This is not the clamshell one like the P. This one is just a regular tablet form factor, Android tablet, 16 gigabytes, $500, 32 gigabytes, $600. You can start pre-ordering today. Ships the middle of next month. That better for you? It's called S.
Yeah, I actually like the look of this.
Yeah, it's got a cool form factor
yeah, it
to
does.
It. The kind of teardrop form factor, I like
and,
it.
But it's honeycomb, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It is honeycomb. I don't know if it's 3.1 or 3.2, actually, but it is definitely honeycomb.
Then we've got the Sony Walkman Pro. Oh, I'm sorry. Before I get to the Walkman, Sony Reader Wi-Fi available in October for $149 with a wireless library borrowing option.
I don't care about this.
Yeah.
Don't care at all. Nobody cares.
E-readers, they're so hot. What's with you guys?
I know.
You
it's an, it's a, Sony
read?
Makes nice e-readers. They're always overlooked. I think people think they're pricier than they are. $149 is not bad.
They've got to have something in this market, so good on them.
So, let's get to the Walkman prototype. Sony debuting the Walkman mobile entertainment player uses Android with the emphasis on audio quality. Wow, this is even later to the market than the Zune.
An Android PMP would be kind of nice. I like this idea. Because Samsung's
there
phone, they have one.
Is there a big market for PMPs still?
Well, if you have a MiFi, it becomes a phone later on anyway. Just have access to Android Marketplace without a contract.
It's the iPod Touch for the Android Marketplace.
Right. I like more of those.
That would appeal to a lot of people.
I do actually wonder if there will be an Android Marketplace on here. Because from what I understand in the past...
It is Android-based, yeah.
Well, but Marketplace doesn't always go on any device that doesn't have internet connectivity. Does this have...
This has Wi-Fi.
It has Wi-Fi.
It doesn't have a built-in 3G connection.
Okay.
Yeah. Then, you guys are going to love this one. The Sony Wearable HDTV. The HMZ T1 is the model number. $800 to put a pair of OLED screens in front of each eye in some goggles and simulate a 150-inch 720p HDTV with virtual 5.1 surround. Now, this is my next reporter, Sean Hollister, said that it did not have a lot of that cross weirdness that you'd have in 3D glasses, so the 3D effects worked really well. But the picture, he said, 720p wasn't that great. Sound wasn't awesome. It was a little heavy on his head.
It's like the cheapest way you can get OLED, I guess, on your television.
It is pretty cheap OLED for $800, but then it's only you are going to be able to watch it.
Well, you can wear glasses anyway. That little box, so it's like it's not as cool as... I thought it was.
I would love this on an airplane.
It's like an HDTV. I just wear on my
HDTV
face.
While
I can
you're,
laugh at myself. Great.
Yeah, during a long airplane trip. You know, I don't want to be bothered. Just put these on.
Yeah, on a long airplane trip. Laptop. This is you.
Who's going to come up to you then?
That's true. Who's going to bother you?
You're going to need Economy Plus.
That's right.
Room for your steering wheel.
Second to last, the 24-inch, 240-hertz PlayStation 3D display that they announced at E3 got some more details. $500 bundled with MotorStorm Apocalypse coming in November. And if you pre-order, you get a bonus of Resistance 3. You have to pre-order by September 30th if you want to get that bonus.
I don't get this thing. I don't understand why this exists.
This is a dorm room thing. That's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's like, I don't want it.
I mean, it's a little expensive, $500. But then on the other hand, when you compare it to televisions, it's not that expensive. Because it's 24-inch television for $500 without a tuner. But you get all your video from PS3. I can see this working for some people, but it's not in everybody.
For gamers, absolutely. I think that one of the features that I really liked in this is the fact that if it's two players and you're both wearing glasses, you can basically be looking at the screen but seeing two different things. So you can each have a full screen version of the game, the player that you're playing.
But if you each have the TV helmets, this wouldn't be an issue, right?
All right, there you
go. So.
The last one I almost didn't even put in because I didn't think it was that big a deal, but apparently it's the thing getting the most buzz at IFA, the 4.2-inch Sony Xperia Arc S. It is a 1.4 gigahertz processor, 8.1 megapixel camera, a reality display, and the ability to convert 2D images into 3D, available in 5 colors globally in October. It's just an improvement on the Xperia Arc. But it's so thin and nice looking. Everybody's all excited about it.
Do you know anybody that owns a Sony Ericsson phone outside of Tony?
I don't even
Tony
know Tony.
Tony Wang, our editor?
I didn't realize what kind of phone Tony had.
I haven't seen these in the wild very often, only in press events. And these are nice looking, but I never run to anybody who has them. So
your concern is, sure, it looks nice, but
it's
who's going to buy
looking.
It?
Yeah, they have great cameras on the thing, but who's going to buy it?
You are.
I am surprised.
You are totally going to buy it.
I'm glad to know that.
Congratulations.
I want to know what my phone is going to be.
Let's move on to the Financial Times pulling their iOS app out of the Apple Store after negotiations broke down. Tom Glover told All Things D, "We removed the app after amicable discussions with Apple. iTunes will remain an important channel for new and existing advertising-based apps." And they do have some travel apps and other things that are still in there, but the main Financial Times app is pulled out because they didn't want to share the revenue for signing up subscribers with Apple. And they decided that, you know what? They told Paid Content, the number of web app users has overtaken users on our native Apple iOS app. So we don't even need to have some half-ass broken app in there that doesn't link to a subscribe button because Apple prevents it, because that's what Amazon did. They just took the subscribe, you know, the store link away. They're like, our web app seems to work fine. We're just going to go with that.
And it actually does work fine. And if money is better spent on that experience rather than an iOS app that they see dwindling usage on, I don't blame them.
Yeah, and with all the tablets out there and all the other smartphones, it makes more sense to have an HTML5 version of it anyway. What's the point in having, we have a development team for this platform and that platform and that platform? This actually makes it easier. I just love the phrase amicable discussions. And be like, Apple's like, give us money. And they're like, no.
They're professional about it. That's all that
means. It was just a very nice discussion. I like.
Well, I'm sorry we can't be taking your money. Good luck with your web app. Thank you. Twitter is probably going to have less amicable discussions with their users if this report turns out to be true. Peter Kafka at All Things D reports that Twitter is going to extend its ad program. The ad program currently places ads in front of users who already follow a brand. So if you, say, follow Pete's Coffee and Pete's Coffee runs an ad, you'll see it at the top of your stream.
Right.
But it won't go in anybody else's stream that doesn't follow Pete's Coffee. The news is that they're going to extend this program to let advertisers place ads in front of Twitter users who are similar to the ones following their Twitter accounts.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but I have a lot of fun with people who are similar to me on a regular basis because sometimes it's people that I know and maybe even I know in real life and I like, and I go, yeah, that's a pretty good group of four. And other times, it's very random. So I don't really want to be served up an ad because Twitter thinks I'm similar to someone that I don't think I'm similar to.
For instance, right now, in my similar to you, you go to your profile on Twitter and you can see it.
Yeah.
I am similar to Callie Lewis, Caroline McCarthy, and Maggie Reardon at CNET.
So that's pretty...
I am going to get all of the advertising for brands that those three people follow.
Sure. Now, in your career-wise, you have probably a lot in common with them as far as the brands that they follow. You have no idea what brands they follow. That's the thing.
Yeah. Caroline lives in New York, works for Google.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be all kinds of New York-based stuff. All of a sudden, I'm going to be getting Dunkin' Donuts ads or something.
Well, Twitter is now saying I'm similar to you. Danny TRS, who's Dan Trachtenberg, and Martin Sargent. And we all know that Martin Sargent follows some weird stuff.
Right.
So, great. Now I'm going to have ads for Peter Pan in Florida.
Is that right? Is that what that means?
I interviewed that guy once.
But I mean, this is slightly different than what they were doing before. But before, you weren't getting the ads in your Twitter clients like TweetDeck and the iOS app. Is there any news about this being different? Are you still going to see the ads even if you were using the clients?
Don't know.
No idea. One would think that they'd test it out on the web first and see if there's a great outcry.
It says that it's an extension of this program, right? Yeah. So,
then again, Hootsuite was the first one to get inline ads anyway.
Uh-huh.
So
we'll just have to wait and see. In the meantime, while we're waiting, let's give you some news views. An HTC phone just got FCC approval. Why should you care? It's listed as a Windows phone. They don't normally list the OS. And it's listed with a Wi-Fi hotspot, a feature only found in Windows Phone Mango. That most likely means it runs Mango. And Gadget suspects it could be the HTC Eternity. Sadly for us, it probably won't be a United States phone.
New rumors surrounding the mythical unicorn that is Amazon's 10.1-inch tablet. Mass production reportedly will be conducted in the first quarter of 2012 with Foxconn handling the orders, according to sources from upstream component suppliers. Amazon's 7-inch tablet PC, which is supplied by Quanta Computer, expected to start shipping in October. And remember that Foxconn already manufactures the Kindle, so
the 7-inch unicorn will come in October still.
Yes.
In the mythical October day.
It will gallop
forward.
The
10-inch unicorn not coming till after the first of the year.
Right.
That's its mythical release date.
So says the mythical sources.
You know, it'd be cool if Amazon just named it the Unikindle.
I doubt that.
And they'll have a screen with
a horn on it.
The Unikindle. It's the best.
HP is running ads promoting how awesome HP is in newspapers like the San Francisco Chronicle. And a very text-heavy ad, the only graphic is the HP logo itself. HP tries to spin the spin-off news, saying our preferred course is to spin off our PC business into a separate company. Now, more than ever, we are committed to the future of personal computing. Methinks they protest too much.
How Shakespearean.
Very.
Yeah. Want to send all your data over VPN easily? Here's your first step. Don't be in Pakistan. The Pakistan Telecommunications Authority told the country's ISPs that VPN traffic must be blocked since it cannot be monitored. If people within Pakistan try to use VPN traffic, ISPs must inform the authorities. They got a whistle blow on you just for VPNing. VPN access will not be subject to a complete ban, but you'll need special permission from the government if you would like to use it.
Okay, who's ready for some accusations?
I am.
Okay, Oracle says that HP hid its plans to hire Leo Apotheker. I'm not sure still, so I'm going to say it both ways.
Leo Laporte.
Not him.
No, it wasn't.
Different
him.
Leo. Okay. Apotheker as CEO. And Ray Lane, who isn't related to me, I don't think, although I do have a great uncle named Ray, as chairman when the two companies were working on bringing Mark Hurd to Oracle. So Oracle's asking the court to rescind a settlement agreement it had regarding Mark Hurd and also wants a court order stopping HP from making false and misleading statements about Oracle's business. Thank you very much.
Talking smack. Kodak CEO Antonio Perez says the company has some looky-loos for its patents. Buyers like Microsoft, Samsung, Google, and Apple could pay up to $3 billion for Kodak's 1,100 patents.
They're just there for the snacks.
Snacks. Meanwhile, OpenWave opened a new front in the patent wars.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
And they waited for the graphic too. Suing Apple and RIM at the ITC, where patent suits start, OpenWave claims violation of 5 patents that cover mobile concepts like data exchange.
Hey, so we need to add OpenWave to that graphic that has been making the rounds.
I have a patent on data exchange, okay, you guys?
Yeah.
You can't do anything with that because that's my patent.
That's mine. That's all mine. Samsung has already said it doesn't want HP's PC business very forcefully and just introduced a couple of new laptops of its own. The Samsung Series 7 comprised of 2 laptops. There's a 14 and a 15.6-inch model with Intel Core i5 or i7 processors, AMD graphics, aluminum finishes, and they start at just below $1,000. Also in Series 7, a slate PC. That's one without the keyboard. The device uses a Wacom digitizer, has a dual-core processor, 11.6-inch screen, and runs Windows 7. Windows 7?
Why not wait till Windows 8?
It has you can get a keyboard, but it's not attached. That's the slate.
Windows 8 is going to be all tablet-optimized. Awesome. Yeah.
A district court has ruled that Absolute Software, a company that makes laptop recovery software, can be sued after it intercepted sexually explicit image of a laptop user. Absolute claimed the pictures were taken in an effort to find the laptop. That's what they do. However, the court said finding the laptop using those particular images may have violated the plaintiff's privacy and federal wiretapping laws. The laptop user happens to be an Ohio teacher and says she bought the laptop from a student.
I think the vodka maker should weigh in and do a campaign that says absolute privacy. And then everybody will be happy.
That might already be a thing.
I think the Ohio teacher is still going to be pretty upset.
Probably.
Even if Absolute Vodka gets it.
Write him a big check. Come on.
According to a report by HardMac, Apple is working on a web-based diagnostic tool that will allow AppleCare techs to remotely troubleshoot devices. A user would have to simply navigate to a website, click on a link, and that would start to send data to the mothership. What other information will be reported? That's not completely known yet, but I'm sure people will get upset about it.
Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Now, I'm very excited about this. The Serval Project, S-E-R-V-A-L, created by Dr. Paul Gardner-Steven, was made in response to the 2010 Haiti earthquake and aims to provide mobile telephony in the absence of conventional telecommunications infrastructure. The project just received a $400,000 fellowship from the philanthropic Shuttleworth Foundation. He says in an interview, the Haiti earthquake demonstrated how the infrastructure-oriented mode of communications has no resilience. If the towers are knocked out, mobile phone handsets become useless lumps of plastic in our hands. The Serval Project has proven that there is no reason for that to be the case. So they're using a sophisticated mesh network to try to create a system where we actually don't need carriers. Our phones broadcast to and from each other in a mesh and provide the service and pass the bits along, a la a distributed network like SETI at Home or that kind of thing.
So this is something that can never happen here. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's absolutely. Awesome. Why couldn't it happen here?
The carriers wouldn't want this to happen is what
well, it would they, be anti-competitive.
How could they stop it?
Let's see. If we hire the right lawyers, probably could.
Get a bill. Pass it through Congress.
Yeah, but they're going to first thing you got to do if you're Dr. Gardner-Steven is like, "Oh, this carrier is trying to push a bill to kill people in Haiti."
Ah, there you go. So you need good PR.
Yeah.
Okay, but if this is actually real, this would be nice to have around.
No, this would be fantastic. I'm glad it's getting money. He says we would expect that in 5 years' time, every mobile phone that's manufactured will have our technology. That sounds ambitious to me, but he anticipates the software will be available free to the public within a year. That's another way you go about it is, you just say, look, we're gonna distribute the software for free. There's nothing illegal about it.
So then Android Walkman you have turns into a phone.
You get the hack. Yeah, you're right, actually. You could start hacking away on devices, and all they need is a radio of some sort. Well, I don't know what the specs are going to be, but theoretically it could work.
Hmm. 5 years. A lot will change.
Yeah. Let's move on to the calendar.
All right, let's. The Toshiba Thrive is going to land in the UK.
5 years from now, I was like, whoa.
Oh, God.
Sorry about that.
Let's move on. In 5 years from now, the Toshiba Thrive is going to land in the UK September 1st. It's now known as the AT100. See if you can remember that. Tomorrow, Netflix's new plans are going into effect for existing subscribers. Remember, that's $7.99 either for the DVD plan or the instant plan or $15.98 for both. You do have until your billing date to change your plan. So if you're like, I haven't done this yet, check to see what your billing date is.
Yeah, so if your billing date is like the 15th of the month every month, you just got to change it before then.
Exactly. Just keep in mind, you might be paying more if you want both. For those of you who bought the Nintendo 3DS before its price drop, you are now eligible for the Ambassador Program, and you get 10 free NES Virtual Console games starting on September 1st. It includes a few of familiar classics, Yoshi, Super Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda. The HTC's Puccini tablet has officially been renamed the Jetstream. The 10.1 Honeycomb tablet.
Names.
I prefer the Puccini.
I like
because
Puccini.
Because I liked making opera jokes.
Yeah, it sounds opera-like, but then Jetstream.
Jetstream sounds like a Transformer.
Jetstream sounds fast. So
and it's an LTE HSPA.
Jetstream also sounds expensive.
And it is. So for HSPA Plus and LTE connectivity, it might be fast, but it's going to be $700.
The Jetstream is also dipping down from the north, bringing us colder air and a line of thunderstorms.
And a 2-year contract and that price.
It does a lot, but you have to pay for it. So that's 2-year contract coming to AT&T September 4th. On September 9th, Sprint is going to raise its early termination fee to what, you ask? To $350 from $200. Now, this is proratable as the months on your contract, as you go through the months on your contract. Some people don't know that, including myself. I have paid for early termination fees when I was really close to the end of my contract.
That's just evil that they didn't prorate you.
This was AT&T. It wasn't Sprint. So just keep in mind, if they ask for $350 and you're like, wait a second, I've been a customer for a while, you might not actually have to pay that. CNBC is reporting that Facebook set to launch its much-talked-about music service on September 22nd at F8. Much whispered.
Yeah.
People have been whispering about it for a while now.
That's what those people on Lost are always whispering about.
Yeah.
F8, they're going to launch a music service.
Music service. Finally, it's coming. Who is it going to be with? Mashable says Facebook's going to partner with Mog, Ardio, and Spotify at launch. So we will see, shan't we?
All right, folks, we would play a voicemail here, but you do need to be sober when you call. Okay. So that's all I'm going to say. 260-TNT show.
No, actually, they need to be sober. Coherent. I don't mind if they're drunk.
Or you can record a video and send us a link to the video, or send us a file, MP3, something like that. On to the emails. Dan Van Hoy in Hong Kong says, just a heads up, August 31st is the last day for free CES 2012 registration, September 30th for international guests. After that, it's $100 and $200 at the door. Is the Twit crew going? I guess Dan's trying to decide, like, I got to register and I don't want to have to pay the money. Yeah, we're definitely going. Actually, we talked about it today in our production meeting, what hotel we're going to stay at and all of that. So look for us at the Consumer Electronics Show 2012.
We wouldn't miss it for the world.
Maybe for the world. Ended.
Well, okay. No one's offering us the world.
But it would take a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Close.
Like
it would take close to a
the
world.
Plane or something.
I think that's fair to say.
I was hit by a truck. I might not go to CES 2012.
I don't know. You might.
Knowing you,
full body cast,
you'd go anyway.
It'll be fun. Just wheel me around.
Nothing's going to stop me.
She lost her teeth in that somehow.
Next email from Blockman, who says, you guys mentioned the touchpad is the second best-selling tablet. This is false. The Asus Transformer has been selling 400,000 to 500,000 units per month since June, and those are concrete numbers. The Fast Company article is completely speculative. That's the one we talked about yesterday. And claims that the touchpad is the only other tablet to reach 500K sales. That is false. To be specific, the Transformer has shipped 400,000 units in April and May, 300,000 in June, and a little less than 400,000 in July. Those numbers are not only shipped, keyword, in channels, because there are numerous reports of Transformer selling out, and that Asus is the only other company that cannot keep up with demand. Shipped and sold, obviously two different things.
Yeah. Plus, now, that's the thing. He's saying shipped, and that was the point of the Fast Company article, which, by the way, it wasn't false. It was one guy's estimate. He was saying, like, I've been crunching the numbers, and I think this might be true. That can't be false.
And this that's also takes opinion. Into consideration them still selling, like, hotcakes.
Yeah.
When they get returned to retail stores.
And what the Fast Company article pointed out was shipped is not sold. So you can ship a lot and not necessarily sell them. We're not saying Asus hasn't sold a single one.
Well, that's what Blockman was talking about. The fact was it was very hard to get an Asus Transformer for a while. So if they shipped 400,000 and you couldn't get one, theoretically, right, they were gone. They were
and
sold.
That's the same logic the Fast Company article right. was using. But even so, around 400,000 in April and May, and then 300,000 the next, that's shipping 1,100. That's still, or 1.1 million, that's still fewer than Samsung has said they shipped of Galaxy Tab, which they say they've shipped 2 million. Those have sold well, too. The Fast Company article was saying, but shipped is not sold, and a lot of them are in inventory. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if HP's definitely sold out, which they appear to be sold, like you cannot get one at all. It's not just hard to get one. It's impossible. They're gone. Then they might be the number two. So anyway, it's a good point. We should not forget the Asus Transformer, Blockman, but I don't think it necessarily invalidates the premise. That's all I'll say. Shall we thank our Redditors?
I would love to.
That's a good idea.
They work so hard.
They do.
People like Dagomer34, Flying Spatula. Love that username, by the way. Gremlin Gizmo, Steven3X, Enjoy What You Have, 83, Tie2Runner, Patboy247. All those folks submitted stories today that were considered for use. And we actually used most of these in the show today. And you can vote up or down what stories you like. When we see 58 people are saying we want to hear about the Department of Justice, you know, filing to block AT&T, we know we're not wrong because we're going to cover that anyway. But, you know, it helps solidify our position. So go to technewstoday.reddit.com. Vote stories up or down. Help us figure out what we're going to cover on the show. We'd like to hear from you. Tomorrow I'm out. So enjoy
like
the show.
Yeah, you're going to Dragon Con.
Yeah, I'll be flying to Atlanta. So here's the deal. Sarah and I, as hosting the show Thursday and Friday. Thursday with the help of Darren Kitchen. Friday with the help of Simon Dingle. And then on Saturday at Dragon Con, if you're there at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to record a special version of Tech News Today with myself, Veronica Belmont, Brian Brushwood, and Justin Robert Young.
Woo-hoo.
It's going to be a special Labor Day episode. Might even get some help from John Strickland in there as well. And that will air, it will go into our feed on Monday, Labor Day, because we don't have we don't have a live show on Labor Day, Monday, September 5th. So if you're in Atlanta at Dragon Con, check us out at the show at 2:30 p.m. If not, I hope you enjoy our Labor Day show. And then we're back with normal shows on Tuesday, September 6th, although I won't be here on the September 6th because I'll be flying back from Dragon Con. But Terpster will be here with Sarah and I, yes.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Joanna Stern, has she heard about this yet?
Yeah, what's true. We have an obligation, Jason, to email Joanna and offer her the option to be on the show.
She needs at least a right of refusal.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah. I believe she has right of first refusal on being on any show with Terpster. Thanks, everybody, for watching. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call. Like I said, leave us a sober, concise, and awesome voicemail.
Intelligent
and we will play
would
it on
be
the
nice,
show.
Too.
260-TNT-SHOW is the number. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you.